Nature 2030 is an international campaign building a formidable coalition to rise to the challenge of the global climate crisis. These podcasts are part of our quest to bring together influential activists, politicians, business and thought leaders to focus on solutions to the climate crisis. The topic of today's podcast is the potential for a sustainable fashion industry. The global fashion industry is one of the most polluting industries in the world. It has a higher rate of emissions than aviation and shipping combined, with a global CO2 output of over a billion tons of carbon dioxide per year. To discuss this further, we are delighted to have with us today David Gordon, founder and managing director of sustainable clothing company Bamboo Clothing. We're also going to bring Merin Chilcott, BAM head of sustainability, into the conversation to discuss how the industry impacts the environment. David, tell us a bit more about your background, who you are, where you come from, and what originally stimulated your interest in environmental issues.
So I was a businessman from 25 to 35 years old. I had a clothing business, which I used to fund my pole vaulting career. And then when I stopped pole vaulting, I decided within a year that actually what I was doing wasn't particularly interesting. I was a little bit uninspired. I was kind of frustrated with the way that the business world worked. And I just thought, if I'm going to be in business, let's do something that is worthwhile. You know, what questions do I want to answer? And I wanted to create a business that could demonstrate success whilst being on the right side of things and dealing with people and dealing with the environment in a responsible and decent way. So when I came across the idea of Bamboo Clothing, that kind of ticked all the boxes for me. It wasn't perfect, but it was really good. And so I started BAM. That was 13 years ago now. Bit by bit, it's grown. And we're now, last year, we turned over about £10 million and we're growing at 30% a year. The mission has slightly morphed with a specific focus on owning our own impact and to show that you can have a successful business whilst being a net positive for all of those impacts that every clothing business has.
Tell me a bit about Bamboo then. Why is it that bamboo is better than cotton?
You know, in terms of the growth pattern, it doesn't need any excess water. It's just only rainfall. You maintain the biodiversity because it's grown in forests and you just chop it down. It's grass, so it just keeps growing. There's a massive carbon sink underneath the ground in the root system, which is just maintained there. And because you don't uproot it, it just holds that in place. It's grown in hilly areas, which normally wouldn't be very good for agriculture, but because it holds everything in place and you just chop it and it grows again as a grass, it's very, very good from a land use point of view and from a biodiversity point of view. It doesn't need any pesticides or fertilizers, so it's clear of that. And so you have all these environmental benefits. But then also, it's fantastically soft when it comes into a fabric. It's fantastically soft. It has various different qualities to it. It doesn't get smelly because bacteria doesn't breed and grow on it, and it dies on the fabric, and it has a tendency to wick away moisture. And it's a fantastic performance fabric. It's very comfortable. So it had all the hallmarks of success, because for a sustainable brand to succeed, it has to offer something to the consumer that is better, that has a USP, and Bamboo has lots of different USPs to it for the consumer.
So what was stopping us using this product before? Why are most t-shirts made out of cotton still and not bamboo?
I would say inertia. I mean, it was 20 years ago that they actually started using bamboo. It wasn't done before then. When I started Bamboo Clothing, nobody knew anything about it outside of China. There was one guy in California doing it, but no one else was offering it, and it was just an unknown thing. But bit by bit, it's grown as a concept, and it's grown in awareness. But you know, they say every overnight sensation is 10 years in the making. Yeah. I think it's just grown in terms of people's awareness of it.
As you mentioned there, you've done quite a lot of traveling in your life. What do you think your explorations and experiences have taught you about the importance of the natural world?
What caused me to think again about the direction of travel? When I started pole vaulting in my sort of early to mid 30s, I went on an expedition across Greenland with a team of Gurkhas, and I somehow managed to talk my way into being the filmmaker for that. And I spent a month in Greenland, and I was just blown away by the natural beauty of that place. That pushed me actually into thinking about how we can do things differently.
As I said in the intro, the fashion industry is one of the largest polluters in the world, with a global output of over 1 billion tons of carbon dioxide a year. A lot of people are now aware of the high emissions of the fashion industry. However, people are less aware of the various other ways in which the industry acts as a pollutant. It accounts for 20% of all industrial water pollution worldwide. It's also the second highest consumer of water worldwide. Can you expand on some of the various ways in which the industry impacts on the environment? I might bring Merrin in for some of this.
Yeah, we've dug into all the different impacts that we as a clothing company have. Every clothing company will have a carbon footprint. It will have a water footprint. It'll have a chemical impact. There's a land use impact, where the raw materials come from. There's also a waste impact, what we do with the clothing afterwards, and a social impact in terms of how you're dealing with the people in the supply chain. Do you want to talk a little bit more, Merrin, about the different impacts?
Yeah, sure. I think, like you said, the most important thing is to take into account all of those different impacts, because you mentioned about the source of using water. The clothing industry uses so much water, and a huge portion of that is used in growing conventional cotton plants. Another huge portion of it is used in the dyeing and finishing of the fabrics. And so it is really difficult to, so you could say, well, we're just going to use all organic cotton, and that will save X tons of cubic meters of water from the growing of the cotton. But then actually you've got a water footprint over here where you're dyeing and finishing all the fabrics. So I think clothing businesses need to look at all of those different impacts to in order to actually start reducing their total footprint. And it's really difficult to balance those impacts. So bamboo, for instance, is amazing as a raw material. It doesn't use any irrigation, the same as organic cotton. Compared with conventional cotton, but then later on in the production process, you need to use water and chemicals to make bamboo into a fiber, whereas with cotton, that part of the process doesn't use so much water and chemicals, but the water and chemicals used in the fiber production stage is easier to manage and easier to recycle, and it tends to be that water tends to come from areas which aren't water scarce, whereas the water used in growing the cotton comes from areas which already have sort of water scarcity issues. So it's so complicated and so difficult, and unless you have a grasp on all of those impacts, then you can end up having creating lots of unintended consequences when you're trying to do the right thing. So it's really difficult as a clothing company to kind of balance those impacts.
And I suppose one of the other areas is actually once the consumer gets clothing as well, you know, a huge amount of water gets used in washing of clothes. And then on top of that, plastic microfibers. And I know that you said in some of your products you do put lycra in, which is a form of plastic. And we know that in active wear in general, where they need a lot of stretchiness to the materials, it is generally plastic that's that. And we have something like 500,000 tons of microfibers are going into the ocean each year of plastic. Why is it that we're not seeing kind of purchasing changes as awareness is going up, do you think?
I think there's a few issues there. And I think one is in the consumer, one is with the brands not accounting for what they're doing. And I think the other one, there's a lot of confusion. Like Merrin said, you know, when you start digging into this, it gets very, very complicated, and it's very easy to cherry pick a soundbite and send out a message which is not looking at the whole picture, and it can be misleading. And so I think a lot of people are trying to do the right thing, but it's very confusing because where do they go for their information? Because everybody's got an agenda and everybody wants to put that agenda across, and it's very difficult to get an overview of what's actually going on and where you can make those purchasing decisions. I think as a general rule, when you're consuming something, when you're looking at buying clothing, I think this business of the fast fashion thing where you might buy something for 10 or 15 quid, wear it at the weekend, maybe wear it once more and then bin it. That is, I mean, if you had any idea of the resources it takes to make that, then you might think again. For example, it takes 2,700 litres of water to make a single T-shirt. And that's often in parts of the world where water is a precious resource. And so I think a general rule of thumb is, if you're not going to buy and wear 50 times a garment, then don't buy it. So the 50 times rule, I think, is a good one to follow. If you're not going to use it 50 times, don't buy it.
I would just add on to that about the coming back to the microplastics and the fact that we use lycra in our garments is, and so many people use lycra in their garments, is because the other side of it is about durability, and it's what Dave was saying about keeping a garment and washing and wearing a garment 50 times. We need to make sure that that garment will survive being worn and washed 50 times. And so another way to kind of balance it is that we could make it without the plastic, but it would probably not last very long. And actually, it's better in the long run that that garment properly lasts and it is as durable as it can possibly be. And we use a smaller amount of plastic as we can, and we use it in a way. So the lycra, for instance, that, or the elastane that we use in our garments is a filament fiber. It's long like a fishing wire. And so fibers like that don't shed microfibers as much as, say, a polyester that's used in a fleece, which is already all fluffy. And so the fibers are looser and they come away from the garment more easily during washing. So it's thinking about things like that and just trying to be logical about it, because it's really easy to say, well, actually you're still using plastic in your garments, but there's a reason behind it. That's why we try. Yeah, again, it's about balancing the consequences of it. But I think durability when you're trying to buy something and when you're trying to design something is a key aspect of it.
What do you think the ramifications will be if the fashion industry continues on its current trajectory?
Well, projections show that over the next 10 years, on our current course, the world is going to need an extra 115 million hectares to produce all the extra clothing that we're consuming. And just to put that into context, that's five times the area of Great Britain. So that's not sustainable, and it's impossible to continue on that trajectory. And so the answer has to be to consume less. And I know that might sound slightly counterintuitive coming from the owner of a clothing company, but just putting those interests to one side and looking at the bigger picture, that's what we have to do as a planet and as a society. We have to consume less. And so it's simply not sustainable.
And so where did you, we're talking about consuming less, you mentioned 50 wares. What's your measurement? How long is 50 wares for someone who's not counting?
Well, I haven't counted 50 wares. Actually, 50 washes is what we're saying.
Yeah.
I would, and again, because I'm slightly biased, because I only wear bamboo and that doesn't get smelly. So I, you know, at least a couple of times I would wear something next to the skin. But in terms of where we got that figure from and why we're advocating that, I think it's a couple of things. Firstly, it's this whole reaction to the fast fashion trend, which is buy something, wear it, and then dump it. That is, it's actually grotesque if you look at the resources required to do that. But where we came up with the 50 washes, apart from that, to kind of separate purchasing clothing for a chuck and wear and then chuck away mentality, is we've been measuring all of our different impacts, and specifically on the carbon impact, we've measured, if you look at the life cycle of a garment, right the way back to where it's grown, to the manufacturing process and then shipping and then in the UK, and then when it gets to the customer's door, actually to fully own the carbon footprint of that garment, you have to then allow for when it's being washed, for the whole life cycle of that. So we had to make our best guesstimate on what we thought was reasonable and appropriate as a starting point. So because a big slice of our, certainly once it hits the UK, a big slice of our carbon footprint in terms of providing a t-shirt, say, is once it arrives at the consumer's door. And that's even if they're washing at 30 degrees and not tumble drying, because that adds massively to the carbon footprint of that garment. It's about, I think it's 40% of the entire footprint is actually after it arrives at the customer's door. Wow. So that's where we ended up, because we had to find a measure of what that footprint was after it arrives with the customer. And we figured that 50 washes was a reasonable amount. So if we want to account in total for the entire footprint of that garment from when it was grown in a field to when it reaches the end of its life, 50 washes was the figure that we used.
Is there anything else that consumers can be doing to reduce their own footprint in this area?
I would say I wouldn't want to muddy the waters of the message, but don't tumble dry. But really, if there's one takeaway from this conversation, it's don't buy something unless you're going to wear and wash it more than 50 times. I don't know if Merrin's got anything to add to that, but I would say I would want that to be the single message to come out of this conversation.
Yeah, and I think that, well, the other side of it is what you do with it. When you're, sadly, it does come to the end of its life, or you realize you don't wear it and you've got a load of clothes sitting around, don't throw them away. And I know it's really difficult because there's not enough information and there's not enough infrastructure out there to make it really easy for people to pass their clothes on. But there's lots of new like rental platforms, and there's lots of new kind of second life options and resale options for clothing, and it's becoming more and more popular, especially with younger customers. We're seeing things like Depop and all of those platforms becoming more popular. I think think about something before you buy it, but also just really think about before you chuck it away, and don't ever chuck a piece of clothing in the bin. There's always something else that you can do with it.
How do consumers decide which clothing is sustainable? You've kind of pointed out it's quite hard for consumers to know what's good and what's not, and the problems there with organic cotton, for instance, that's only looking at one area of it. Is there anything else consumers can do to find ethical clothing?
It is very difficult, and I do think this is one of the big areas where we do have a problem, because obviously clothing brands have caught on to the populism of sustainability and the fact that everyone should be doing something, and there's a lot of virtue signaling and sound bites, and it does make it very difficult for the consumer, because like I say, everyone's got their own agenda, and they might be saying one thing but it doesn't actually cover even the tiniest part of their overall footprint. There is a website called Good On You, which rates different brands around the world, for a lot of the major brands around the world, for what they're doing, and it's independent. So that's one good source. But I personally, I would love to see brands publishing what they're spending on this area and how they're spending it, because ultimately, it's about the amount of resource that a brand is putting into solving this issue for them. And it's difficult to give exact numbers, but in very, very broad terms, you should be spending around about 1% of your turnover. And that, again, that's very, very broad, but that's what brands ought to be looking at doing, and then detailing what they're spending. Because if every brand did that, then consumers would be able to, and they had a one-page statement that consumers could look at, then that would arm consumers with a broader range of facts and understanding, because it's a minefield picking through who's doing what.
And what's that 1% to be spent on? Sustainability measures?
Yes.
Right. Many clothing companies justify their high level of production by promoting recycling schemes for used clothes. Do you think increased recyclability actually offers a viable solution, or is it just greenwashing?
That's a tricky question. Certainly, as Marion says, recycling is a great thing to do because it extends the life of that garment. But I think the real nub of the question and the nub of the solution is to own your different footprints. So the chemical footprint, the water footprint, the carbon footprint, all of these different footprints need to be measured and owned by the brand as part of their normal business activity. And that just doesn't happen right now. And so we can look at all of these lots of different things and we can say, is this the answer? Is that the answer? But actually the answer is for each clothing brand to investigate, understand, measure, and then obviously minimize all of those footprints, but then be accountable for them. That's the answer. And it's not, for me, it's not in piecemeal bits to say, oh, you know, yeah, we'll carry on doing what we're doing, but then if you recycle it, then everything's fine. No, that's not the answer.
I'm going to bring on to a few quick fire questions, David. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
You reap what you sow.
What would the name of your autobiography be?
Gets there in the end.
I thought it would be something pole vaulting related. But and finally, what's your most unpopular opinion?
Oh, probably what everything I've said in this podcast in terms of the clothing industry. I'm basically coming on here and saying,
don't
please,
buy
everybody, buy less clothing. Don't be mindless consumers. I mean, that's probably the most in terms of representing my industry. That's not going to be very popular.
Well, David and Merrin, thank you very much for taking the time to record this podcast. If you've been listening, thank you very much. And do listen again.
Today's Behind the Story interview was brought to you by Nature 2030, a campaign run by Higginson Strategy. Higginson Strategy supports government bodies, NGOs, charities, companies and individuals, all within the business of making the world a better place. To hear more about our work or get involved with our positive campaigns, go to our website at higginsonstrategy.com.